Welcome to another episode of Just a Few Takes, JFT for short, the snacks and sports podcast and everything in between. Putting it down for the culture, checking in one time, hopefully the last time, about the pandemic. And to me, that's the new normal. It's mask, it's hand sanitizer, and it's just a way of life. And if you're not being safe, and if you're not doing everything that you can to protect your fellow neighbors and man, then you suck. No, but seriously, pandemic's here to stay. Everybody be safe. Everybody, just do what you need to do out there and be safe with it.
Yeah, because, I think it was read in the paper today, Crenshaw's football team down in South Central, they're not going to the playoffs because not enough members have been, the team have been vaccinized. And, you know, the people I know that have had the coronavirus that were vaccinated, you know, the symptoms were, that even though they got it, the symptoms were less. They weren't as severe. So, it's
just going to keep you from dying and going to the hospital.
Yeah, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Yep. And let's just stay on the safe side out there and keep. Don't be afraid, but, wear your mask, wash your hands, and be safe out there. It does seem like out on the road, people are getting back to normal. I mean, everybody's wearing their mask, of course, but people are just so much more acceptance of one another, and not as living in fear. So, it's getting back to normal, but just, being safe. And that's the most important thing. So, it was a great week out there. Last couple weeks, a lot of sauce sales, a lot of friendly people, a lot of packed restaurants. It's a good thing out there.
Yeah, it definitely is. So be safe out there and, use your best judgment. So last week we touched on a little bit of finders keepers, losers weepers. And I don't know how that ranks on the list of legality of when it compares to whoever smelt it, dealt it, ball that, don't lie, shotgun. So playground rules.
Yeah, playground rules. I think he who smelt it, dealt it is kind of... passing the buck a little bit because...
Feels like it, right?
Yeah, because it's like, wait a minute, I smell something and I'm the first to notice it. Maybe, I remember, and I don't want to, throw myself under the bridge, but I do remember one time when I was playing baseball at the Butte College summer program, and we were driving through on our way south on 70, and we were driving by some cows, and I had been drinking the night before, and I think I probably had a burrito or something. But anyway, make a long story short, I let one loose, and the one guy in the front goes, Frank, that's horrible. And before I could say it wasn't me, the driver said, oh no, that's not Frank, we're driving by the cows.
Oh, you got bailed out.
Yeah, I got bailed out by location, Petaluma.
Greenhouse effect.
Yeah, exactly. Now Petaluma, was known as a cow town years ago, and you drove through Petaluma, you smell cows. That's the way it is.
Yeah.
But since now it's more of a bedroom community and the cows have all migrated elsewhere, we can't use that in Petaluma
happy
anymore.
Cows.
Yeah. So he who smelt it, dealt it, I think it doesn't hold up to
finders keepers, does it?
No, finders keepers is straightforward.
Yeah.
There's no gray area.
No, that's true.
Finders keepers, I think, is possession is 9/10 of the law.
There
so
you, go.
You know, it's a kid's thing, but it also translates to adulthood because
it holds up like shotgun.
Yeah. So what is shotgun? Is that like shotgun wedding or
no? It's like if you want to sit in the front seat, you call shotgun.
Oh, shotgun! Shotgun, of course. Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what? I played shotgun or did shotgun with certain people when I was younger, and if they were bigger than me, that didn't always hold up either.
But they're just they're breaking the rules.
Or they were sociopathic behavior and just said, no, I never heard you say that. Or maybe they all be those.
That's weak sauce. That's what they call them on the playground. That's weak sauce.
Yeah.
You gotta honor shotgun.
I think most of those guys are in debt or in prison or ended up being lawyers. But anyway, that's another.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. So let's be fair and honest. If you call shotgun, we shouldn't judge on your gender, your size, anything. I know those.
The matter. Car's got to be in sight, though. You can't do it 4 hours before the trip.
No, that's.
It's got to be when you're going to the car.
Car has to be in sight.
Yeah.
You know what we did as kids? We played That's Our Song. And if we heard a new song on the radio, we go, that's my song. And then when my brothers we had to ask permission to sing along or even listen to the song. We had a weird dynamic in our family, but
what is that, a driving game?
Yeah, because we did a lot of road trips. You know, that's how
we used to do. There was a slug bug.
I don't know that one.
Every time you see a VW bug or bus, slug the person, or at nighttime, one headlight out.
Oh my God! Yeah, I think we played similar games like that, because you know when I was a kid, I used to count in San Francisco growing up in the '60s and early '70s. We used to count, and I swear to God, 8 to 9 out of 10 cars was a Volkswagen back in those days. Everybody had a Volkswagen. Yeah, it was good on gas. But you'd think, wow, in the city with the clutch and everything.
German car.
You know, but German engineering. It was simple. They were inexpensive. You know, they weren't even water cooled. Very easy to work on with the engines.
The VW bugs or the buses?
It didn't matter. If it was a VW, we counted it.
No, but what did you see more of?
Bugs.
The bugs, that's what I would guess.
Everybody had a bug. Yeah, I wanted a bug, you know. They got good gas mileage, economical. Because, you know, the city, growing up when I was there, wasn't so much the super...
It was still built on a hill, I'm sure.
Yeah, but it wasn't like the super, super rich.
Oh, I see.
And it was a lot of middle class, a lot of
Silicon Valley.
Yeah, a lot of families, you know, kids on every block had, you know, a bunch of kids. You know, now it's more... you know, it's an extension of Silicon Valley and you know, rich and super less schools, expensive. Less kids, less middle class. You have to be rich to live.
Or grandfathered in some rent control.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I know a few people that have been living out there for, you know, 30 years and don't pay much. So yeah, it's so there's still some middle class there, but mostly it's rich and the homeless. So which to me is a going backwards. It's a third world country as far as I'm concerned, but we'll stay away from politics for right now. Back to the kids. That's where we all started from, and these are the games that we enjoyed playing, and the rules were simple, and you know, unless you had the cheaters, you know, the games were fun and
fair. Yeah, even I mean, because everybody on the playground, everybody cheated a little bit, it feels like. There's always, you never got a group of kids together without somebody trying to cut a corner. So that was just part of it. But I still enjoyed all the games. It was so fun. It was just because it seems like I would always be playing against myself. So it'd be like, I want to get better at wiffle ball. I want to get better at this. I wanted to learn a curveball pitch. I wanted to, you know, hit the ball. So it was always just trying to up, like I used it as practice almost. You know, of course, I always wanted to win. And sometimes you'd load the team, sometimes you wouldn't. But it was always fun. So we'll start with wiffle ball. It seems like that was one you only needed two people to play. You know, and the ball is awesome. It would make that, you could throw, just curve it. It would make that whistle noise with the air. And then I think as you got a little older, you could do the curve balls. You could do all kinds of crazy pitches. We'd also sometimes, because you either had the yellow bat or the big red bats.
Yeah. The only problem I had with wiffle ball is the ball was...
they crack.
They fused at the center, and mm-hmm. they would crack. And then once you got a little crack, it was done, because it just within a few hits, the thing's toast. And then it was no fun. Obviously, it's no fun. You had to hit the ball just right to get that home run, though. That's for sure. And it didn't have to be a hard swing. It just had to connect. Yeah, I remember when we were in, I think it was seventh grade. It was me, Duke Wall, and Tony Puig. We were all... We kept count of home runs the whole year.
You got to. Now, did you have a fence, or did you just have it? You hit it past this and
it's
home run.
No, it was to the upper parking lot. They had an upper parking lot, and so we kept track. And the three of us were the, you know, the top three. And I think I finished third. Actually, I think I want to say it was either Duke or I think Duke came in first. Tony came in second, and I came in third. But it was fun, because every day, you know, we would keep count for the year. Like, I'm up to 32, I'm up to 40, you know, and you know. But then end of the year, you know, we all hit our fair share of home runs.
Anybody get past that infamous 61? It probably was at the time. Different with wiffle ball.
I don't think we got that high.
No. What we would do is sometimes the ball would crack, sometimes the bats would crack, and because sometimes, you know, you hit rocks with that yellow bat and do stupid stuff as a kid, but we would tape that bat, the yellow bat. We put some duct tape on the end, and it almost turned it into, it changed the game. The ball would, it wouldn't get that same sound. It would change your swing because it wouldn't be
a little heavier.
Yeah, so it was interesting how it always turned out almost like you end up playing ragball then, because you got tape on the bat, the ball's cracked, so you just end up trying to tape the ball, but the ball tape never stays on the ball.
Well, you know, you reminded me of a story. So when I was playing up at Butte summer program, Rick and Rick. God rest Rick's soul. He died in a tractor accident when we were up there. Horrible. But the three of us would always play wiffle ball at their apartment complex, right? And Rick was a twin. I was a twin. And then Rick and his twin were dating twins. So it was kind of cool. But anyway, little side note. Great guys. But we played wiffle ball and had so much fun playing wiffle ball. And then one time we went down to play Lodi. And like I struck out like three times, and the coach was like, "You're behind on every pitch," and I was like, "Cause I didn't adjust."
Yeah, it'll mess up your swing.
And so if it's a totally different swing than a regular baseball swing or a softball swing, because you have to slow your swing down. Cause the most important thing is timing, to hit that ball right. You don't have to have a big strong swing, you know, or real fast bat speed. You just have to have good timing. But it will throw your regular baseball swing, because after that game...
Well, it's also the pitches are different, because the pitchers usually is hucking it as hard as they can, because you got that wind resistance going through there. So their arm wind up and the whole wind up is way different than a regular pitcher, from what I remember, because they're putting everything they got on that thing, and the ball is not going as fast as a baseball would. And there's no laces to read.
Yeah, and then don't forget the strikeouts. So with strikeouts with the tennis ball and a regular baseball bat, and that ball... You know, you could throw it pretty fast, but it was lighter. It was in between a wiffle ball, obviously, and a baseball. So a lot of guys didn't want to be the pitcher because they didn't want to throw out their arm. It never bothered me, but then I could throw all day long. You know, I just had one of those arms and bodies that I could play basketball, baseball till the sun went down, and even longer. But it was fun because you could get a curve on that. With the strikeout with that tennis ball too, and with the tennis balls that we used were the ones that were the old ones, because you wanted them slick, you know. And same thing, you still had to have that a little bit more stronger swing than a wiffle ball bat in the timing, but the timing was closer to a regular baseball swing. So that's actually how I really developed my baseball swing, was playing strikeouts as a kid. You know, not being able to play in high school, so we played strikeouts, and that's where. I really developed my swing. So what you're saying, you know, the practice, that hand-eye coordination,
it translates.
Know, it translates right to the thing, because by the time, you know, when I went from wiffle ball to hardball at Butte College, I struck out every time. It was bad. But when I went from strikeouts to trying out for the Flame team in San Francisco, you know, I hit a home run off of Larry Loomis, the best pitcher in San Francisco at the time, had a full ride to USF. But I was able to walk in there and hit a home run off him, because the translation from strikeouts to baseball was so similar, even though the ball was a little bit. Actually, I think it helped, because you did have to slow your swing down a little bit, where I think if you just play baseball, you're always swinging harder, because the ball's harder, so you want to swing harder. And that's why I became a really good hitter, because I became more of a finesse hitter from strikeouts. You know, so anyway, I just thought that off the top.
Yeah, there's one constant, and you got to make contact.
Yeah,
yeah.
But with the tennis ball, you once again, you didn't have to hit it as hard to make it go a long way.
Well, that's with the baseball too. Is sometimes those swings where you just make good contact is that, what do they call that? That sweet part of the bat, and it just goes a mile.
Well, we talked about this before with James Campbell when I played up at Butte College. He had made it all the way up with the. With the Royals as a pitcher, actually, but he was MVP of the Golden Valley Conference back in the 80s, and I remember him getting fooled. He was a lefty, and I remember him getting fooled so bad on an off-speed pitch that his whole body was out in front, and all he did was do a check swing left-handed and hit the ball off the left field wall, opposite field. Yeah. Didn't hit a home run, but to have that much power on a check swing where you didn't even fall through.
Yeah, I've seen it.
I mean, that was the best one I ever saw, because the ball hit the wall. But he kept his hands back, and he just made that contact and hit the sweet spot. The ball did the, you know, the ball did the work.
Yeah.
He
just the pitcher did the work.
Or the pitcher did the work, but he had the precision. Yeah. So, what once again with baseball, wiffle ball or strikeout. You're never going to see this. You're always going to see something new every day where you're like, wow.
Yeah.
I've never seen that before.
What we used to do, I don't know if you ever did it, is you ever hit a golf ball with a with a big barrel East End bat?
Yes.
Oh my gosh, that thing will go 2 miles.
Yeah.
Or what, a country mile, they'll call it.
Yeah. 600, 700.
Yeah.
I've done it a few times.
Yeah.
And then I had to run because I heard a crash.
Yeah. But we used to hit golf balls with that, or even a tennis racket. A golf ball with a tennis racket will go
forever. Oh, I never did that one.
Oh my gosh. We used to hit everything with everything. We used to hit rocks with all that stuff. I mean, we used to, yeah. It's a lot of fun. But a golf ball.
You kept the glass manning business.
Well, we lived near fields.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So these were all in fields, and then you hit them down towards the park. Or yeah, but no, it wasn't neighborhood. In the neighborhood, you couldn't do it like that. And when we played in the neighborhood, and stickball is another thing. We never played it. I don't know if that's an East Coast thing or what, but it's the same.
Definitely.
It's like a broomstick or a stick, you know, and then a smaller ball, almost like a hacky sack, I think they'd use. I don't know. I mean, it's not a hacky sack, but the size of a hacky sack, smaller ball. Stickball, wiffle ball was something we played in the streets, you know, because you could hit that off cars and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Every car had a car alarm.
Not breaking any windows,
but yeah, those things were always fun to hit. And like you said, it's almost like it turns into a home run contest. You see, you could hit it the farthest.
Yeah, the golf ball, I did do that a few times, and wow, what fun that was.
Yeah,
just
and now the golf balls
go so far.
That's always a self pitch.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Oh, you don't want to be on the receiving end of that one.
No.
Here, I'll throw it to you. Bang.
Yeah.
Dead.
No.
Yeah.
That's always, you throw it up and then you just put everything you have into it. And those were always the funniest ones to see because there was always sometimes me, sometimes you, sometimes a buddy. You throw it up and it's almost like the eyes are closed and you swing with everything you got and you miss. And it's that whole, you almost do the circle like you're drilling yourself into the ground like Bugs Bunny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, well, you know, watching some of these pro players in this World Series recent we just had, I don't mean to be critical, but God, some of those guys, they pull their head, pull their eyes, and it reminded me of the Bugs Bunny spin because they would spin around. And it's like, yeah, I get it.
I think it was like 2 years ago or 3 years ago. There's no more hitting for. Position, it's home run or nothing. Home run or strikeouts. Everybody's swinging for the fences. So batting averages are down, on base percentage is down. It's all or nothing, it seems like people have been doing the last couple years. But speaking of pro...
What happened to Felix Mignon?
I don't know, retired. But speaking of retired, let's do a little shout out to Buster Posey.
Yeah, definitely. Gotti.
And pros.
I think he won the batting title 1 year, a three-time... he won the MVP. Did he win it three times?
I don't know, but he was fun to watch. I watched him in the beginning of his career and then kind of tuned out in baseball a little bit, but he was really fun to watch. I mean, he had that gruesome injury, came back from that, was a great hitter, just it seems like a stand-up guy, just a great teammate, great Giant, you know?
Yeah, when you're a catcher, a good catcher, and you can hit? Oh my God, that's so rare.
Yeah, I mean, and it seems like their careers are always seems like a little shorter besides a few of them.
Yeah, I guess he could, you know,
the knees. I don't know. You're down there all the whole
time. He could be a DH first baseman, but I think he wanted to spend more time with his family. I
mean, how much
money do you need to go enjoy the rest of your life?
I'm sure he's there.
You know, so I mean, he's the opposite. I think he's the opposite of Muhammad Ali, but. You know, go enjoy your retirement. I don't even think he wants a coach or anything. I think he just wants to, you know, spend time with his family. Good stand-up guy.
We really enjoyed watching his career.
Have him. I mean,
Looked good in that Giants uniform, didn't he?
Yeah. How many worlds? They won three World Series.
They won three. It seems like they're going every year. Other year, it was really fun. Bear sports, you gotta love it. So shout out to Buster Posey, great career, deserve all success and happiness in your retirement and all that good stuff. So wiffle ball, stick ball, those were fun ones as kids, and they translated. The skill set was there for baseball, and it was just fun. You didn't need a whole team or a whole field. You could just go out there and play, and it was fun. And it was almost, you know, I remember ghost runners. You know, that's a single. You had designated if it goes over
that's
the
right.
pitcher, it's a double. I mean, there's all different kinds of rules.
Every playground seemed like the Red Sox Fenway Park.
Oh, there it is.
You know what I mean? Because there was little obstacles and I know my friend and I, Ruben, we found a strikeout thing at the junior high school over here, I think, or one of the schools. And it was just there was all these obstacles, but in a fence and everything, and trees, and it was like just like they. It's like, did they design? And the backstop, they had a backstop. Yeah. I was like, did they design this for strikeouts? And mind, you had the basketball court. Court was the fair. Then you had these lines for the pitcher's mound, the home run. I mean, it was like, wow.
Yeah, they do good stuff nowadays. But when we played, I never really played, I think, on an actual field or anything like that. So we would play like indoor soccer. So as long as it didn't hit the ground. So if it went up in the trees and the trees stopped it and it came down and you caught it, that's an out. If it if it bounced off a car and you caught it, that's an out.
Yeah.
It was like ground's hot lava. And as long as you caught it before it hit the ground, you're out, buddy.
Yeah, and everybody had the rules. I remember that there was an argument one time in St. Cecilia's because the where the walkway was a home run fence, but the building on the corners had the cornerstones. So I hit a ball that went over the fence, but then it hit the cornerstone and came right back. And so my friend Tony, who was pitching, said, no, that's not a home run. It came back. And I said, no, it went past it's like I was watching the other day with Harden. Did you see that one the other day with Harden where he shot the ball and it went in the basket, and then the way that hit the switch to net, it popped back out?
Yeah, that was last year.
Or was it last year?
Yeah,
I saw the highlight.
He dunked it.
Was it a dunk?
I think so. He dunked it, and it hit off his. It looked like it popped back out, but it was a dunk. But they didn't call it. But yeah, that's interesting. I think
said it was a point.
Oh, really? Then it must be a different one. I saw one where they didn't count it, but it was good. But that's one of those things that I don't think you could argue it. It's like a football. Is it a catch or is it not a catch? I think you have to establish those rules before you do the first pitch.
Yeah.
And if it's not established.
But it was one of those that was like, okay, if it goes over the walkway, it's a home run.
Yeah.
So it went over the walkway.
But you'd have to establish if it goes over and comes back, then it's an out. You'd have to establish that before you pitch.
He was saying it was a foul ball.
Gosh, that's a tough one, man.
Yeah.
I think it's a home run.
That's what I thought, because once it passed the thing, but there was an imaginary line.
Well, that's like if it curves fair.
Oh, like the bunt.
Yeah.
Like the bunt.
You know what I mean? It's where it ends. So I don't know. I don't know. You have to establish those rules before you do the pitch.
He made me go back and take that at bat again.
Yeah, that's one of those balls don't lie. You got to do it again and keep it fair.
Yeah, but then I told you, like, those how the rules get started. So you're like, okay, I'll give it to you this time.
Yeah, but next one, that's a home run.
Let's establish the rule.
But yeah,
there's an imaginary line at the base of the walkway at the top,
yes, you know,
where the roof was. There's an imaginary line because, you know what I'm saying?
As it's fair, as it goes over the fence, that's a home run. It doesn't matter what it does once it clears the fence. I think that's how baseball rules are.
Oh, yeah, right.
So it's the same difference. That's like when it curves fair or if it curves foul. So like you could hit it past that third base line.
Right.
And as long as it's in bounce or bounces fair, it can roll a foul. It's still a live ball.
But if it passes on the inside of the third base line on a liner and curves, if it bounces foul, it's a foul ball.
Yeah, it has to land fair, but
land fair.
Yeah, yeah. So that's an interesting one. But though, like I said,
I never thought of it.
Those rules got to be established before, and that's one of those things. Playground is it's a little bit of an argument. It's this, that, and the other, and then it's the next one. Next one's home run. Next one's this, and that's how you establish rules.
And it's the same. It's the same with basketball too. But you know, you go to a park or a gym you've never played at, you ask for the rules. Because one time I was playing at this one gym. And I don't know why they had a double line right under the basket. And my favorite move was to go under the basket and make a reverse layup.
Yeah, they use that as
a screen. And the first time I stepped on the line, the kids were like, no, that's you stepped out of bounds. And I was like, wait a minute. The regular out of bound lines is over here. This line is irrelevant. It was for some other
game. Probably volleyball or something.
Yeah, for volleyball probably. That's irrelevant. But they told me, well, this is our home court. And that's how we play.
Gosh, you got to give it up to him.
Yeah, and I go, okay, so you're taking away, you know, part of my deepest game, which was reverse layups, right-handed or left-handed.
You got to adjust. You just got to use the rim instead of the backboard.
Yeah, exactly. So, and the same with the backboard we talked about. You got a small backboard that limits my backboard shot. But if you have even a regulation backboard was too small for me. But we talked about that already. So, once again, you have to have the rules established before, and then if the rule, if there's a rule that comes into question during the game, you've got to make up that. You've got to say, okay, well, let it slide this time, but from now on, that's a home run. Or from now on, that's okay.
Or there is a opposite. I don't know about for wiffle ball or baseball, but I know for basketball, you shoot for it. Ball don't lie.
Out of bounds
or a foul or whatever, you shoot a free throw. Yeah. You shoot a free throw, and then if you make it, you get the ball out of bounds. If you miss it, the other team does.
But, you know, that ball don't lie. I've seen plenty of calls where it was blatantly wrong. And
no, this is playground.
I know, and then the guy makes a free throw, and it's like, ball don't lie. It's like, well, no, but you do.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but, hey, that's the name of the game, and you know, when it's a shootout, the best man wins. So you better be able to make that top-of-the-key shot if you're going to question any calls. So practice your game. Don't have a weakness in your game. Do everything. Rebound, pass, set screens, you know. Do all that stuff. So,
but another one we used to play, and this is going way back to like school, to the school recesses, is dodgeball.
I love dodgeball.
Yeah, it was everybody's in a circle. There's a couple people inside. There's a couple different ways to play it, but I remember in school, it was on a circle. And then there's people in the inside, and then people were on the outside of the circle. You couldn't go in the circle.
Yeah, standard.
And this is when we used those big red balls. You know, and those things were just a nightmare, especially because you played no matter what it was. So when it was cold, that ball hit you, it hurt like a bad.
Yeah, considering those balls, you know, we're pretty pliable. If you got hit in the head, it rang your bell.
Yeah, for sure. And then,
especially, do you remember the little ones?
Yeah.
Because I remember we used to use the ones that were smaller than the basketball.
Yeah, it's like a volleyball.
But yeah, about that size. But then I remember they came out with those littler ones that almost like a bigger than a softball.
Oh no, we just had the ones that were like the size. Well, we had two of them. We had ones that were big, like a medicine ball, and then those ones were fun as. Totally fun because what you could do with
hard
those,
to throw though
they were hard to throw but what I would do and we would do is you bounce it once and then you interlocked your hands like a bat and then you would swing your arms like a bat and you would just club that ball at people.
Oh yeah,
and it was so fun. And with the little ball you cup that thing, you cup it in your palm and then in your wrist, and then you just like a shot put almost just wing that son.
Kind
of
like the monkeys at the zoo.
Exactly, but we ain't throwing poo.
No.
You know, we're flinging it.
That was one of my greatest joys. I used to run from my house in San Francisco up in St. Francis Woods down Slope Boulevard with my buddy Andy Thompson, and then we'd go sneak into the San Francisco Zoo and walk around before we'd run back, you know, kind of split the workout out because it was still, a couple miles each way or whatever, or maybe a mile and a half.
You're getting your heart rate up.
Yeah, but yeah, it was a good little run. And it was a tough run, especially on the way back because it was up the hill. But the thing about the going to see those monkeys is to see the tourists, and we would sit there and wait because we'd be ready.
Oh, yeah.
They'd go behind their back and try to be sneaky and then just fling it.
Oh, they're smart.
And there were times that we'd watching people that weren't expecting it, and we would wait. And when those monkeys got those people, that all we could do is laugh. But anyway, that was
Yeah, no, that's hilarious. It's the monkeys they're just like us.
Yeah, you want to.
They're smart.
Make fun of me for being in.
Monkey see, monkey do. I'm gonna throw my poo at you.
Yeah, that was fun. But anyway, a little side note is, be careful for those of you that don't know the game the monkeys play. It's called I don't know what it's called, poo in your face, but. Just be careful out there when you're at the zoo. Expect the unexpected.
Yeah, stay on your toes.
Yeah.
But for dodgeball, and it seems like then once you got a little older, you'd play it in the gym, and that's when it was like a half-court thing where there was the half-court line, and it was more of a square than a circle. You know, you're both in squares, and then it's one team against the other team as far as you just try to hit the person, whereas in a circle, it was just the people in the inside of the circle were trying to dodge it, and then... The rules are: if you caught it, if you catch the ball that they throw, they're out. If they hit you, you're out. And it's one of those things where this was where you could just unload on somebody. It was legal play. You know, there wasn't like above the waist, below the waist. It was if it hit you. You could aim for their face. You could aim for
vital organs,
all that. It was, you're catching hot ones.
Yeah, we also played the one against the wall too.
What's that one?
Well, the dodgeball where they have you against the wall, the line, and then...
Oh, and then you got to just run back and forth. That's almost like
I think that was more if you had less players or something, maybe, because you could actually play that game with just two people. Because it's going to bounce right back to you, so you don't have to worry about chasing it. But the other one, you have people all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, at a 360. So I think that was one we played when we had less people. And that was a fun one.
Well, too. Yeah, in the gym, it seems like there was I don't know, four or five different balls, you know, that people were flinging at the same time. And then on the circle one, if I remember correctly, there was maybe one ball or two balls. And when there was a big one, there was only one. Or maybe there was two or three. I'm not sure. I don't remember.
Listen,
but
you know, the rules are infinite.
There are no rules except you got to dodge.
Yeah, and you got to play
by the rules. If you could dodge a wrench, you could dodge a ball.
Yeah, dodge a wrench?
Yeah, it's a saying from Dodgeball the movie.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
That was a great movie.
Yeah, it was hilarious. But yeah, dodge, dip, I forget the breakdown, but yeah.
Yeah, that was an awesome movie. God, that Ben Stiller and who was the tall guy?
Vince Vaughn,
that's right. Yeah, great.
Yeah, great cast.
Great chemistry, those two. Great chemistry. Yeah, what other kind of games?
Then for basketball, the basketball seems it depends on how many people that you had and if it was half court or full court. But I mean, there's one on one, tip it, 21, make it, take
tip,
it.
Tip in?
Tip it is where it's usually one or two people, and then you shoot the ball at the basket, and then you got to shoot the ball on a bounce. You got to have your feet off the ground. And then once you make
tip it,
tip it in.
Oh, that was my favorite.
Yeah.
Nobody could beat me at that one.
And then after you make it, you shoot free throws.
Yeah, I forgot about that. That was one skill that I used a lot playing, you know, not being the tallest guy out there is, you know, when you got on that offensive rebound.
Yeah.
And you could get up there and just tip it in, and it would surprise people. I don't see that as much in the NBA as I used to. I think the NBA used to do that a lot more.
Yeah, because everybody long rebounds, everybody's shooting threes.
Yeah.
There's the big guys, you know, it's all switch defense, and they're bringing the big guys
get
out.
Get the rebound and kick it out.
Yeah.
So okay. But I mean, that was...
But I love the tip and dunk. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Yeah,
those are the best.
Yeah, and so tip-in was one of those games, and 21, that was just...
Yeah, those are fun to play. One-on-one, those are things. Yeah, because basketball, you could play it by yourself, you know, just do shots, and you could play with one, two, three, up to 10 people.
Yeah.
You know, it's fun.
Down at Glen Park, there was sometimes we played 21, and I swear to God, there were 25 people waiting to get in main court, and it'd be crazy. Be crazy, but you know what, if you could get away from everybody and hit the three and then hit your free throws, if you had a good three pointer and you could hit your free throws, you could win at that game, you know. But it was hard because, you know, you might not get a rebound for, you know, 10 minutes, and then you better kick to the back and hit your three, then hit your three to five three throws. I forget, some courts you hit three free throws and you were out. Sometimes they have you hit three from the top of the key. Sometimes it was five. But whatever the rules were, you better be able to hit your free throws.
Well, wasn't it also you do it where it was like three free throws, then you went to the top of the key, and then you took it out? Or maybe that was for...
You could do it any...
Yeah.
So many different ways.
There's so many. And that's also where you talk about home court advantage, or home court does the rules on one-on-ones. You know, you call your own fouls. Then you'd shoot free throws, and then it's win by one, win by two. Is everything one pointer, and then the three pointers are two pointers,
or is it threes and twos?
Threes and twos. You know. There's so many different ways to play, and it's, I don't know if there's a best one. The whole thing is you just got to make
whatever rule it is.
Well, winner gets the ball,
and we always used to do win by two. So, you know, if you missed your free throw, like let's say you had 20 and you missed that free throw,
you go back to 16 or 18 or something, or 13.
I guess it doesn't. Yeah. It does.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you how many times I missed the last free throw.
Oh yeah, the pressure's on.
But then I came back and won anyway. But it was like, oh my God, you know. So sometimes
sometimes you lose on purpose, or you miss on purpose.
Yeah, because
you want to keep playing.
Because you don't want to, or you miss that free throw. Because if you miss this last free throw, you got to go back to 13. So it'd be like, you know, I think I'll miss this one.
And yeah,
and I'd take my chances of getting a rebound and hitting it too.
Strategy.
Yeah, it was part of the strategy, and sometimes it backfired, and sometimes it worked. But it's like any game, strategy is, you know, we don't have a crystal ball, we don't know. So, strategy, you know, that's why you play. What they call the armchair quarterback. It's like, oh, you should have done this. Well, at the time,
in the moment,
you don't know.
It's
you know,
going on reflex.
Like the 49ers when they didn't run they tried to throw the football in at the goal line that one Super Bowl. It's like, everybody's like, what were they thinking? You know, just run it in.
Or the Seahawks. The Seahawks did that too. They had Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah.
And it's then like, they threw an interception and lost.
Yeah, it's like, why did you do that? You should have gone with this the simplest, higher percentage, safer risk.
Trying to get too fancy with it. But there's another basketball game. I forget what it was called, but it was basically from top of the key, you shot the ball. So you'd have a line of guys, and then there'd be one person in front of the other person, and then the first person shoots from the top of the key. If they make it, they pass it to the next guy. And if they miss... Then the other person shoots, but you got to make it before the guy in front of you. And if the guy behind you makes it before you do, then you're out.
Oh, yeah.
So if the first guy shoots it and misses and you swish it, that guy's out.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
If the first guy swishes it and passes it back to the other guy behind him and he makes it before you make it, then you're out. And
right,
then you just keep going like that.
Yeah.
So that was a fun one. And then that was really a good one to get your top of the key and your layups down. Because if you get a long rebound, you're done.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we used to play a similar game to that too, but the 21 in the
those are the most common. Those are nationwide.
The tipping one was one that I used to love to play.
Well, yeah, because then it was always there was a grounding, they call it. That's like
your feet are on the ground.
Feet are on the ground. Yeah, because you'd have to make sure that both those feet were off the ground when you caught that ball.
Yeah. And you only got three chances.
Yeah.
Between the three, and then it went back to the free throw shooter. So that was a fun game.
Or if it was a long, long rebound, I remember, then the other person would throw it up for you over there. Like if it like went out of bounds, then the person would throw it up, and you'd have to do like a jump shot.
Oh,
in there.
Especially if the guy was close to 20, and you wanted to, you'd get rather give it to the other guy that has maybe 8 points or 10 points. Then to let that other guy get another free throw to win. So that was part of strategy,
so
even though
you're
tipping it to your other opponent, because you still could have a chance to beat that guy too. Yeah, that was weird. That was a weird concept about the game. But both of those games, you know, if you didn't have a lot of players out there, it would hone your game
time
skills.
Hand-eye coordination, the timing, it's all that.
Yeah, but it honed your game time skills. So
quick decision making.
I love those games.
And they're a lot of fun. You know, they're fun to play. You know, and you know how it is on the playground. Lots of trash talking, lots of smack. You know, it's just so much fun to play like that. Those games, especially in basketball. That was part of it. It was so fun. So one-on-one, tip it, 21. Make it, take it was more like a warm-up game. You know, I don't even know if that's a real game. It's just, you know, if you make it, you take it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's more warm-up. But still, you know, I never thought of it. It is part of the game.
Yeah.
You get these guys that get hot, and then they just keep making it, and the guys get the rebound. They're serving them, you know? So it's kind of
you just
like
turn
quarters.
Into a rebounder.
We were playing quarters as a kid, and you'd have to make up rules. You have to say this before you drink. You have to say this after you drink. Otherwise, you got to drink again. And it was all part of the fun. Quarters, I had a roommate in Chico, Bob Wallington, that never missed a quarter in his life, and he could make it from a mile away. He was a natural, this guy. It was a phenomenal watch. I mean, he all across the table, he bounced a quarter, put it right in the cup. Nobody beat him.
Steph Curry with the quarter.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, so Bob, great job out there. I think he's back up in
Colfax. There's random games like tag, capture the flag. Those, I don't know if we've ever really played those. Those
kick
are more
the can.
Kick the can. Those are more, I think, like summer camp games, you know, that they would just get all the kids together. All right, let's throw them out on the field. And capture the flag was fun. It was basically, it felt like flag football without a football. Because there's a flag on each side, and then you got broke down in teams, and then there's a line that once you cross that line, you could, if you tagged them or pulled their flags, then they were out. And then you'd have to run, grab that flag, and go back. And it was, I don't know if there's much strategy to it, because I don't think you could use blockers or anything like that. I think you just had to run and dodge these people and get the flag and then get it back to your side.
Right. But and what was the one with the guy in the middle? What was that one?
Red Rover.
Yeah.
Sent such and such right over. And then I don't remember what happened once you sent them over. Did they have to go over without getting tagged?
No, I'm talking about the one with the ball where...
Pickle,
yeah.
Where there's a guy in the middle and you got to tag him out.
Yeah, you know, you got to keep throwing the ball to the other side.
Oh,
no, we did have bases, as I remember.
Well, there's one. I think there's one with football where I guess, but I don't know if
I forget the one we used to play where there was two sides with a base and you had to run.
Yeah, I think that's pickle.
Oh, pickle. Okay, that was a fun game. I love that game.
Yeah, and then
because that's what you could, and then if you could translate that into baseball when you get picked off. and you got to go back and forth. And I would watch baseball players get stuck or get in between and just give up. And then you'd watch those guys that go back and forth, back and forth.
Well, loosey-goosey.
Yeah, next thing you know, the guy from second made it to third. Then he made it from third to home because this guy from first to second, you know, made these guys, you know, focus on him. So it was a very elusive, very athletic moves and deking, and I love that. I mean,
it was for base running. We used to do it in little league practices.
Yeah,
it was a warm up. You stretch out your muscles, and it also taught you base running. You know, lead off and running back and forth. You know, getting close to the guy. The it was good for the base runner or the guys that weren't running the base as well. Because you throw that ball too early, the guy gets second base. You don't do it right. You know, then the guy gets
and you know,
almost third base. It's almost best.
What
in those
we used to do is strategy. If we had first and third, in this baseball, if we had first and third and we needed a run.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And get maybe, the guy home. Maybe you didn't have a good hitter up there. What you would do is you'd have the guy from first pretend to get picked off.
Yeah.
Like take two big
leads. As long as it's not two outs.
No, we would do it with two outs. And then the guy would throw to first, right? And as long as the guy from third scored before they tagged him out, it counted as a run.
Yeah, that's.
You know, and sometimes they, all of a sudden they go, no, throw home, and they to get distracted, throw home.
And it's overthrow.
I would be safe, and then the guy would be staying in second. We used to do that when I played for the Menlo Park. I forgot what the name, Menlo Park.
I always thought that it was people trying to get too fancy with it. If I was.
It was a total deke, though, because you got picked off on purpose.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's a decoy. It's the okie doke. But I'm not mad at the second baseman just walking the guy back to first. I don't care about getting him out or any of that other stuff. Depending on if there's a guy on third, then it's a whole different ballgame. But,
right.
But all that fancy stuff and trying to juke and all that stuff, I would just walk him back to first base. Because you try and throw, you try and get him out, it's usually an overthrow and an error, and the guy gets third.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I'm not mad at the second baseman just walking that guy back. But that's not as fun. It's not as exciting.
Well, walk him back, but do throw it when he gets close.
Yeah, but when you do it close, it does seem like when it's always an overthrow.
Yeah, you got to have the soft touch, and not everybody has the soft touch.
No, no, because
like,
I'm thinking...
We talked about Shaquille O'Neal and Will Chamberlain with their free throws. They were so big and strong that it was hard to have a soft touch.
Well, that's like for them, it's like shooting a tennis ball.
Yeah.
I mean, their hands are so big. They're just you know, real-life giants.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
That's a great analogy. Like, could you shoot consistent free throws with a tennis ball?
Well, get one of those mini balls.
Yeah, you couldn't do it.
It's a whole different ball game. Yeah, so I mean, it's tough, and that's why people always said, you know, swallow your pride and shoot underhand.
Yeah, Rick Barry. Rick Barry, and then Rick Barry got to George Johnson to do it.
Yeah, there's a couple guys that did it, but I don't know. It's to me, free throws, it's a mental thing. It's 100% mental. I mean, everybody knows the fundamentals. Everybody knows bend your knees, find that zen spot, bounce three times, spin the ball, and then just shoot it, you know.
Relax,
all that, but it's...
That's the best way to...
But people miss them. I mean, and they'll hit 1,000 of them in a row in a gym, but once the crowds are there and the people are on the line and it's... They miss.
Yeah.
It's hard. So I mean, it's sports, of course, is all mental, but that's what...
Sports, of course.
Yeah, yeah, of course, that's a horse,
that,
it's a horse.
That'd be a good name for a podcast. Sports, of course.
I'm sure it's out there.
Okay.
There's one for everything. But that's why the recess was so awesome and playground games were so awesome, because it feels like that level of competition was there per se, but the... stress and the stakes and everything else is for bragging rights, as far as a pay is different than of something that people are betting on as far as earning a paycheck as pro sports or even organized sports.
But remember, you know, Dizzy Dean said it's not bragging if you can do it.
No, exactly. But I mean, if win or lose, you know, you're gonna go out and play next recess.
Yeah.
You know, because you had the first recess, you know, or your break, and then you know, sometimes you would keep the score for lunchtime because we were picking this back up at lunch.
There you go. Yeah, this thing ain't over.
No, it ain't over. So I mean, so it was real fun, and it was it just felt different. It was you know, just stuff that you did as a kid. The stakes might have been different, or you didn't have those life lessons yet, or I don't know what the terminology is, but there was something about playing stuff as a kid.
Yeah, and then I remember what we used to do when we played strikeouts at St. Cecilia's is we would play for money. And then when we, so there was something at stake. And then when you,
well, there's always something
then
at
when
stake.
You won, you would always go up the street, and there was a little deli there. Can't remember the name of the deli, but we'd all get, you know, the winners would all eat a sandwich with the soda and laugh at the ones that had to give up their money.
Yeah.
Because they didn't get to eat, you know. So there was, sometimes there was more at stake than,
Bragging rights.
Bragging rights is, you were skipping a meal if you lost. So, you know, money
just
was,
a lunch.
Money, yeah, but money was hard to come by when we were kids.
Still is.
You know, we had paper routes and stuff like that. But, you know, back then, a $2.50 for a nice sandwich. And, but, you know, for $2.50, you could get a sandwich and a soda.
Gosh, what a time to be alive.
You know, next thing you know, it went up to $5, and then now it's $10. But I remember, you know, back then, you could go to the sandwich shop and get a sandwich and a soda for under $3. So, yeah, it was fun to know that, hey, if I win, these guys are buying me lunch.
Yeah, that is fun. And then as far as recess goes, I consider these things sports per se, but maybe because remember rainy days? So in rainy days, there was like dominoes, heads up, 7-Up. There was different indoor
seven
games.
7-Up, that sounds really
heads up, 7-Up. Is everybody put their heads down on a desk and then you put your thumb up and people would go by and pick their thumb and then they go stand in front of the room and you had to guess who picked you.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, I mean, I just remember running rainy days because you couldn't go outside when it was rainy days, but you had to burn off some energy somehow. You know, and I think they break out the board games. I'm trying to remember back then.
Yeah, because you weren't gonna study 24/7 because your brain and body needs those mental breaks.
Yeah, so I mean you had your breaks.
Mental health breaks. And if you
for sure.
You do anything too much. I mean, yesterday I did the route up to Fort Bragg and I was on the road for 14 hours, and you know it was mentally tough to just go, hey, you know what, if I don't get to these certain points, you know, I've got to maintain every delivery and. You know, I got to catch myself in a hurry and don't get sloppy and don't forget something. But I also had to maintain that, hey, I got to be at this store by 10. I got to be at these restaurants by 2. I got to be at these stores by 7 or 8 because they close. And when I hit that last delivery and I got there at 5 to 8 and made the delivery, I was like, man, I was like winning a game. You know, it was fun.
It's a feeling of accomplishment. Yeah. Once you're done, you're done.
Yeah.
But rainy days were something that I still don't look forward to them. But yeah, something that as a kid, I used to hate a rainy days. They were the worst, you know, because you didn't get to go outside and play.
You're limited, and that's where your creativity has to come in. As it's, we look outside here, it's raining, but you know, there's other things that we'll be able to accomplish today, and then tomorrow will be sunny and we'll appreciate the sun even more.
Yeah, we need the rain. But yeah, for recess it was fun because you could do a version of two-hand touch or flag football. Well, I don't think we used flags, but it was always like 3-on-3. So sometimes you had a rusher, sometimes you didn't. The quarterback would self-hike it, and then it was basically one wide receiver and then one cornerback. Basically, and you just did a route, and then you would play, and it was so much fun because it was a deep route every time. So you'd fake the post and go deep.
Yeah.
You know, catch that long ball like Jerry Rice used to. So football was super fun at that level because there was a couple, you just have to find that all-time quarterback guy, you know, to get the guy that was good at throwing the ball. And it was so fun to do those routes, play wide receiver, you know, everybody had the touchdown
term,
dance.
The all-time quarterback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes they play for both teams or it was just someone that could throw that to make that pass.
Yeah, exactly. I was all-time quarterback. I like that.
Yeah.
That was fun. Because you got to throw the whole time. That was great.
Yeah, and then sometimes there'd be a rusher where they would do one Mississippi, two Mississippi. You know, you count to five or then you had one blitz, you know, and then you could blitz it. And then it was two completions for a first down. So if you'd go deep on two passes... And then if you didn't get them, you need to just do your two quick completions. It didn't even matter the yardage. You just kind of run up and catch the ball.
And you always had to watch out for cars. And I'm talking about parked cars. Cause
my
brother one time sent me on a route. And I went up and I caught the ball and leaped and caught the ball and landed on the hood of a parked car. And he goes, I go, why did you tell me that car was there? He goes, oh, I thought it'd be funny.
You're working on a stand-up act and you're trying to run around.
What a surprise for me when I jumped up because I didn't touch the car till I landed. And then all of a sudden catch the ball and then land on the hood of a car.
So, yeah, you're lucky they don't make cars like they used to.
This was back
that's
in
what
the
I mean,
70s.
But you would have left a huge dent.
Oh, right. No, I didn't leave a dent at all.
No, just a dent on
your
body.
Back then I was, you know, 110 pounds, 120 pounds.
But nowadays, with the plastic cars, who knows what would happen?
Yeah,
but yeah, but football was fun, and then when you could get a bunch of people, flag football was fun, because that's another thing where you could just kind of turn sideways and they couldn't get the flags. I don't think you could do complete 360s in flag football.
Yeah,
you could.
Oh, yeah.
I think when we played...
There was a guy at Reardon when we played, and he was the best one in the whole class, but the weird thing was he didn't play on the football team.
Well, it's a whole different game with pads on and a helmet.
But he was a decent-sized kid, and he was... I forget the kid's name.
His parents probably wouldn't let him. He probably doesn't have CTE today because of it.
Yeah, he was a year older than me, but...
But yeah, in flag football, it seems like it was fun because it was a hip thing. It was like
he'd always do the 360, though. They wouldn't get his flags. Or they might get one, but he always scored. That guy was awesome. I wish I remember his name.
But yeah, flag football was fun because it was a dodge thing. It was you had to be fast, but it was more on the moves. You know, a juke here, a juke there. You had to move your hips almost like a hula dancer or a hula hooping. You know, and just it's just a juke city.
Yeah, that's why I did a lot of dancing when I was younger for cross training. I guess for both. I guess you did those kind of flag football for your dance moves too.
Well, the dance moves usually come after you score.
Oh yeah. My favorite was Robert Newhouse for the Dallas Cowboys. Remember him when he did that leg thing after he scored a touchdown?
Is that who started that? Yeah, the funky
Robert,
chicken?
Yeah, Robert Newhouse. Yeah.
But yeah, there's nothing like a good touchdown celebration.
Yeah, you know what? Even though Dallas was a 49ers rival, I liked a lot of the players on the Dallas Cowboys. I didn't hate on Dallas.
America's team.
Yeah.
And I don't know how they got that, but yeah.
The cheerleaders.
There it is. But yeah, the football was super fun, and you know it got more competitive as you got older and more people, and it was one of those sports that was super hard because you had to do so much practice because it was such an active sport where you're getting contact every play that you got to be in shape and you got to do all those things. But that's why it was awesome at the playground level because you didn't have to be able to run a 4.4 and you know, a 4-minute mile and be in super shape. You know, it's a half field and it's two completions for a first down and, you know, scoring touchdowns every play. It's almost playground football was like arena league.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. And arena league, you know, I went to some of the games while I lived in San Jose.
So fun.
It was really fun to watch because you're up close and you could see every play where football... You know, at a regular stadium, sometimes it just looks like rugby where there's a blob moving and you
can't tell what's happened until after the play.
Yeah, so actually of all the sports, I think football is the least fun to watch live. I think that one you really need to see the close-ups. And
yeah, well, they say for live sports, for football especially, you go there for the atmosphere.
Right.
And you watch it at home if you want to watch the game.
Yeah, and the tailgating, of course.
Yeah, it's tailgating, and it's the atmosphere of the game. It's
which
so fun.
We've talked about tailgating.
Yeah.
Tailgating
is
sometimes more fun than the game.
Oh,
I'm sure there are people...
There's people that tailgate so hard, they don't make it to the game.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's people that have gone tailgating and without even having tickets for the game and stay in a parking lot and watch the game, and then when they come out, they can share the after party or victory with their friends.
There it is.
You know? So I wouldn't mind that one.
No, huh?
You know? No, we did that one year when the Giants opener and we couldn't get the tickets. This was years. Oh God, this was years ago. Maybe 10 years ago, and we went and we couldn't get a ticket, so we just stayed and watched the game in the parking lot with all the tailgaters. It was funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we didn't even go to the game.
Oh yeah. So Bree says reminiscing. It's the best, you know, those sports games where there was no odds, or no, not no odds, but there was no, it was not a big deal. You just went out there and played. Sometimes you ruined your good clothes. You always coming home with grass stains. Mom's mad, you know, yeah. Ruin your new shoes. They're supposed to last you a year,
yeah.
but it's only 3 months. So it's just so much fun. But speaking of back in the day and stuff that I think is maybe not used as much, or I don't use it as much, is a good pot roast. You know, that's one of those meals that you see. It's like from back in the day. I only seen it like on TV. You know, the nuclear family, mom's at home with the apron on, cooking up good old pot roast. You know.
Yeah, and the smell in the house when you come home, when you can smell it cooking,
yeah.
With all the goodies and the garlic and everything, and my mom always put a lot of seasoning on top and got the ones that had the string on it. Is that the one you're talking about?
There's those.
Or
kinds.
Just a regular.
Yeah, just regular it's one. A good chunk of meat. And then just Google a recipe. We Google the recipe, and you know you cook it with some wine. The wine cooks out, and then some potatoes and baby carrots and some onions.
Yeah.
and you just throw it in the oven a good 3 hours, something like that, and then you pull it out and it's good to go. And it's so good. It's one of those meals you could have for a couple days.
Yeah, and like we talked about before, the sandwiches the next day a lot of times tasted better for some reason.
Yeah, it marinates in that juice and that sauce.
Yeah, and it just, oh God, I'm getting hungry just thinking about
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
right,
and
now.
what I did is it's not like a prime rib where you have the horseradish sauce, but I like that kind of pepperish,
yeah,
hot thing. So what I did is I took the chili gods, I took that hot mustard sauce, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm a huge fan of it, and I just doused. I used half a jar.
Oh, the holy mustard?
Of the holy mustard, I doused. You know,
this is the next day?
The next day.
Oh,
well,
okay.
I did it day one, too.
Oh, really?
But
okay.
Day one, I just did a little bit of where I dipped it.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Because I
yeah.
had the juice from it, and it was all that. But then day two, when I go to microwave it, put it all on my plate, have it all cut up in bites, microwave it, and then I just doused the pot roast with the mustard sauce.
Wow, that does sound good. Because what I like about the holy mustard is it's like a sauce. It's not as thin as a sauce, but it's thinner than a lot of mustards that are just like I don't know how to describe it. Just not
well, you got to try it. It's one of those things that is worth trying, and it was with the texture of the meat and then the flavor of the mustard plus with that little.
Yeah,
we'll call it that kick in the background, but it's not too much and it's not overpowering like a horseradish sauce is. But it has
got a little bit of that sensation.
Yeah, so the contrast of the wiry meat with the flavor of the mustard and the kick, it was so good. And then I would also even use it on the potatoes. It was you know, you get a bite of meat in there and then you get a little bit of potato and it's all that mixed together. It was so good. I don't think it's a very utilized meal. I don't see people, it's in our rotation now, but I mean, a good pot roast is one of those things that it's, I've...
And it makes a great sandwich the next day.
Oh, yeah.
A great sandwich. And speaking of which, you know, we do have to give, you know, our stamp of approval to some, you know, somebody that we talk about every episode here. But we came back with the Luna Lover of this week.
Oh, there it is.
It sold a hell of a lot of it. But I would have to say I want to give the Luna Love Rub the Chili God stamp of approval, even though it's kind of self-proclaimed, because just speaking of the pot roast, I think that Luna Love Rub on top of a pot roast.
Oh, I didn't even
then,
think about
yeah,
that.
And then when you make the pot roast, all that those herbs are going to go down into
yeah.
it, and then you make a gravy out of it. And then you have your potatoes. I mean, I never thought of that till just now. And
then what do you think you should like a prime rib or something? You know how you stab the hell out of it. You think you should stab the pot roast a little bit and get the rub inside of it, or you think it'll just go good on top?
Either way, because it's what it's going to do is it's going to lock in all the flavors, because the rub, the consistency of the rub is more than a powder, but it's not thick granule. So when you spread that on the meat, it's going to seal the meat. And so when you cook with it, your pot roast is going to be more tender, but then you're going to have that outer crust with that nice flavor. Because my mom always used a lot of pepper in her pot roast and herbs and stuff. So it had that flavor burnt into the crust. So anyway, if you get a chance to get the Chili God's Luna Lover Rub, it's in a little packets, and you do decide to do a pot roast, that's the way to go. And I would say throw a little extra salt and pepper on there too. But you know, you don't have to use it by itself. Because I don't put a lot of salt and pepper in there, because you know, if you put too much salt and pepper, you know, some people don't like it. So if you have less salt and pepper in your rub, you can always add more. You can't take more out. It's the same with our heat level. You know, we don't make our stuff too hot because we want everybody to enjoy it. If you want it hotter, add a little hotter sauce to it. You know,
yeah.
Some chipotle or some habanero, or I had some habanero corn nuts on this road trip. You know, because I go in all the stores and always try to buy the snacks you can't see at your main mainstream grocery stores, and tried some habanero corn nuts. They were a little hot, so I could only eat three bites, and then I had to take a break. But really good. They're really good. I've been enjoying corn nuts. I think the Chili Gods are going to do a spicy corn nut here in the future. We need to get in the snack game, right?
Oh, yeah. It's all about the snacks. But, yeah, but the pot roast is great because it's not a whole lot of prep. You know, you slice and dice some potatoes, slice and dice some onions, some baby carrots in there, then some wine and the sauce, and then you preheat your oven and throw it in there for a couple hours. You could do other stuff. It's not a whole lot of prep, and then you just, you know, wait for it, and then it's a great meal. Some bread on the side, a little bit of that holy mustard sauce. It's a winner.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, pot roast, like I said, I used to make these pork roasts years ago, and I would make them, and, you know, this is when I was living by myself or whatever, and I would make them, and I'd have sandwiches for 3-4 days.
Yeah.
You know, because it lasted in the fridge that long. And
oh, yeah.
It didn't go bad, and it always had that flavor, and then sometimes I'd reheat it, sometimes it was good cold, but, the pot roast, the thing I like about any of those roasts, not just the beef one, all of them, is you're going to put that effort, you're going to cook it longer than you would cook another meal, but once you have it, you've got a sandwiches for,
you're good till Wednesday, make it on a Monday,
3 or 4 days, you know, sometimes longer, you know, if you got a big one. So Chili God Sample of Approval to pot roasts in general, and the Luna Love Rub, which we just brought back under the Chili God's label, so look for that at your local stores, and keeping the pot roast.
Yeah, the pot roast is the way to go. It's a life hack there for a good meal for a couple days in a row. So one more time from JFT, Just a Few Takes, the Snacks and Sports Podcast, putting it down for the culture, 10 toes down for everybody that loves a good snack and a good sports. We'll see you next time.